Chapter 13. Torter and flung her arms about his neck. In the first disorder of his senses he was conscious only of seeking her lips, but an instant later he knew it was no kiss of love that met his own, and he felt her tremble violently in his arms. He saw in a flash that he was on unknown ground, but his one thought was that Fulvia was in trouble, and looked to him for aid. He gently freed himself from her hold, and tried to shape a soothing question, but she caught his arm, and, laying a hand over his mouth, drew him across the garden and into the house. The lower floor stood dark and empty. He followed Fulvia up the stairs and into the library, which was also empty. The shutters stood wide, admitting the evening freshness and a drowsy scent of jasmine from the garden. Odo could not control a thrill of strange anticipation as he found himself alone in this silent room with the girl whose heart had so lately beat against his own. As he had sunk into a chair, with her face hidden, and for a moment or two he stood before her without speaking. Then he knelt at her side, and took her hands with a murmur of endearment. At his touch she started up. And it was I, she cried, who persuaded my father that he might trust you. And she sank back sobbing. Odo rose and moved away, waiting for her overwrought emotion to subside. At length he gently asked, do you wish me to leave you? She raised her head. And no, she said firmly, though her lips still trembled. You must first hear an explanation of my conduct, though it is scarce possible, she added, flushing to the brow, that you have not already guessed the purpose of this lamentable comedy. I guess nothing, he replied, save that perhaps I may in some way serve you. Serve me, she cried, with a flash of anger through her tears. It is a late hour to speak of service, after what you have brought on this house. Odo turned pale. H here indeed, madam, said he, are words that need an explanation. Oh, she broke forth, and you shall have it, though I think to any other it must be writ large upon my countenance. She rose and paced the floor impetuously. Why is it possible, she began again, you do not yet perceive the sense of that execrable scene? Or do you think, by feigning ignorance, to prolong my humiliation? Oh, she said, pausing before him, her breast in a tumult, her eyes alight, it was I who persuaded my father of your discretion and prudence, it was through my influence that he opened himself to you so freely, and is this the return you make? Alas, why did you leave your fashionable friends, and a world in which you are so fitted to shine, to bring unhappiness on an obscure household that never dreamed of courting your notice? As she stood before him in her radiant anger, it went hard with Odo, not to silence with a kiss a resentment that he guessed to be mainly directed against herself, but he controlled himself and said quietly, madam, I were a dolt not to perceive that I have had the misfortune to offend, but when, or how, I swear to heaven I know not, and till you enlighten me, I can neither excuse nor defend myself. She turned pale, but instantly recovered her composure. Why, you are right, she said. I rave like a foolish girl, but indeed I scarce know if I am in my waking senses. She paused, as if to check a fresh rush of emotion. Oh, sir, she cried, can you not guess what has happened? You were warned, I believe, not to frequent this house too openly, but of late you have been an almost daily visitor, and you never come here, but you are followed. My father's doctrines have long been under suspicion, and to be accused of perverting a man of your rank must be his ruin. He was too proud to tell you this, and profiting today by his absence, and knowing that if you came the spies would be at your heels, I resolved to meet you at the gate, and welcome you in such a way that our enemies should be deceived as to the true cause of your visits. Her voice wavered on the last words, but she faced him proudly, and it was Odo whose gaze fell. Never perhaps had he been conscious of cutting a meaner figure. Yet shame was so blent in him with admiration for the girl's nobility and courage, that compunction was swept away in the impulse that flung him at her feet. Ah, he cried, I have been blind indeed, and what you say abases me to earth. Yes, I was warned that my visits might compromise your father, nor had I any pretext for returning so often, but my own selfish pleasure in his discourse. Or so at least, he added in a lower voice, I chose to fancy, but when we met just now at the gate, if he lacked a comedy, believe me, I did not. And if I have come day after day to this house, it is because, unknowingly, I came for you. The words had escaped him unawares, and he was too sensible of their untimeliness, not to be prepared for the gesture with which she cut him short. Oh, said she, in a tone of the liveliest reproach, spare me this last affront, if you wish me to think the harm you have already done was done unknowingly. Odo rose to his feet, tingling under the rebuke. I if respect and admiration be an affront, madam, he said, I cannot remain in your presence without offending, and nothing is left me but to withdraw. But before going I would at least ask, if there is no way of repairing the harm that my over-assiduity has caused. She flushed high at the question. W.Y., that, she said, is in part, I trust, already accomplished. Indeed, she went on with an effort, it was when I learned the authorities suspected you of coming here on a gallant adventure, that I devised the idea of meeting you at the gate. And for the rest, sir, the best reparation you can make is one that will naturally suggest itself to a gentleman whose time must already be so fully engaged. And with that she made him a deep reverence, and withdrew to the inner room. 2.5. When the professor's gate closed on Odo, night was already falling, and the oil lamp at the end of the arched passageway shed its weak circle of light on the pavement. This light, as Odo emerged, fell on a retreating figure which resembled that of the blind beggar he had seen crouching on the steps of the Corpus Domini. He ran forward, but the man hurried across the little square and disappeared in the darkness. Odo had not seen his face, but though his dress was tattered, and he leaned on a beggar's staff, something about his broad rolling back recalled the well-filled outline of Cantapresto's cassock. Sick at heart, Odo rambled on from one street to another, avoiding the more crowded quarters, and losing himself more than once in the districts near the river, where young gentlemen of his figure seldom showed themselves unattended. The populace, however, was all abroad, and he passed as unregarded as though his somber thoughts had enveloped him in actual darkness. It was late when at length he turned again into the Piazza Castello, which was brightly lit, and still thronged with pleasure seekers. As he approached, the crowd divided to make way for three or four handsome traveling carriages, preceded by linkmen and liveried outriders, and followed by a dozen mounted equerries. The people, evidently in the humor, to greet every incident of the streets as part of a show prepared for their diversion, cheered lustily as the carriages dashed across the square, and Odo, turning to a man at his elbow, asked who the distinguished visitors might be. Why, sir, said the other laughing, I understand it is only an embassage from some neighboring state, but when our good people are in their Easter mood they are ready to take a mail coach for Elijah's chariot, and their wives scolding for the gift of tongues. Odo spent a restless night face to face with his first humiliation. Though the girl's rebuff had cut him to the quick, it was the vision of the havoc his folly had wrought that stood between him and sleep. To have endangered the liberty, the very life, perhaps, of a man he loved and venerated, and who had welcomed him without heed of personal risk, this indeed was bitter to his youthful self-sufficiency. The thought of Gianan's fate was like a cold clutch at his heart. Nor was there any balm in knowing that it was at Fulvia's request he had been so freely welcomed. For he was persuaded that, whatever her previous feeling might have been, the scene just enacted must render him forever odious to her. Turn whither it would, his tossing vanity found no repose, and dawn rose for him on a thorny waste of disillusionment. Cantapresto broke in early on this vigil, flushed with the importance of a letter from the Countess Valdu. The lady summoned her son to dinner, to meet an old friend and distinguished visitor, and a verbal message bade Odo come early, and wear his new uniform. He was too well acquainted with his mother's exaggerations to attach much importance to the summons, but being glad of an excuse to escape his daily visit at the Palazzo Terminci's, he sent Donna Laura word that he would wait on her at 2. On the very threshold of Casa Valdu, Odo perceived that unwonted preparations were afoot. The shabby liveries of the servants had been refurbished, and the marble floor newly scoured, and he found his mother seated in the drawing room, an apartment never unshrouded save on the most ceremonious occasions. As to Donna Laura, she had undergone the same process of renovation, and with more striking results. It seemed to Odo, when she met him sparkling under her rouge and powder, as though some withered flower had been dipped in water, regaining for the moment the languid semblance of its freshness. Her eyes shone, her hand trembled under his lips, and the diamonds rose and fell on her eager bosom. "You are late," she tenderly reproached him. And before he had time to reply, the double doors were thrown open, and the major domo announced in an odd voice, "Colon, His Excellency Count Lelio Tresker." Odo turned with a start. To his mind, already crowded with a confusion of thoughts, the name summoned a throng of memories. He saw again his mother's apartments at Pianura, and the handsome youth with lace ruffles and a clouded amber cane, who came and went among her other visitors with an air of such superiority, and who rode beside the traveling carriage on the first stage of their journey to Donna's. To that handsome youth the gentleman just announced bore the likeness of the finished portrait to the sketch. He was a man of about 32, of the middle height, with a delicate dark face and an air of arrogance not unbecomingly allied to an insinuating courtesy of address. His dress of somber velvet, with a star on the breast, and a profusion of the finest lace, suggested the desire to add dignity and weight to his appearance without renouncing the softer ambitions of his age. He received with a smile Donna Laura's agitated phrases of welcome. I come, said he, kissing her hand, in my private character, not as the envoy of Pianura, but as the friend and servant of the Countess Valdu. And I trust, he added turning to Odo, of the Cavalier Valseca also. Odo bowed in silence. You may have heard, Tresker continued, addressing him in the same engaging tone, that I am come to Turin on a mission from His Highness to the Court of Savoy. A trifling matter of boundary lines and customs, which I undertook at the Duke's desire, the more readily, it must be owned, since it gave me the opportunity to renew my acquaintance with friends whom absence has not taught me to forget. He smiled again at Donna Laura, who blushed like a girl. The curiosity which Tresker's words excited was lost to Odo in the painful impression produced by his mother's agitation. To see her, a woman already past her youth, and aged by her very efforts to preserve it, trembling and bridling under the cool eye of masculine indifference, was a spectacle the more humiliating, that he was too young to be moved by its human and pathetic side. He recalled once seeing a memento mori of delicately tinted ivory, which represented a girl's head, one side all dewy freshness, the other touched with death. And it seemed to him that his mother's face resembled this tragic toy, the side or mirror reflected being still rosy with youth, while that which others saw was already a ruin. His heart burned with disgust as he followed Donna Laura and Tresker into the dining room, which had been set out with all the family plate, and decked with rare fruits and flowers. The Countess had excused her husband on the plea of his official duties, and the three sat down alone to a meal composed of the costliest delicacies. Their guest, who ate little and drank less, entertained them with the latest news of Pianura, touching discreetly on the growing estrangement between the Duke and Duchess, and speaking with becoming gravity of the heir's weak health. It was clear that the speaker, without filling an official position at the court, was already deep in the Duke's counsels, and perhaps also in the Duchess's. And Odo guessed under his smiling indiscretions the cool aim of the man who never wastes a shot. Toward the close of the meal, when the servants had withdrawn, he turned to Odo with a graver manner. Why, you have perhaps guessed, Cavalier, he said, that in venturing to claim the Countess's hospitality in so private a manner, I had in mind the wish to open myself to you more freely than would be possible at court. He paused a moment, as though to emphasize his words, and Odo fancied he cultivated the trick of deliberate speaking to counteract his natural arrogance of manner. The time has come, he went on, when it seems desirable that you should be more familiar with the state of affairs at Pianura. For some years it seemed likely that the Duchess would give His Highness another son, but circumstances now appear to preclude that hope, and it is the general opinion of the court physicians that the young prince has not many years to live. He paused again, fixing his eyes on Odo's flushed face. The Duke, he continued, has shown a natural reluctance to face a situation so painful both to his heart and his ambitions, but his feelings as a parent have yielded to his duty as a sovereign, and he recognizes the fact that you should have an early opportunity of acquainting yourself more nearly with the affairs of the duchy, and also of seeing something of the other courts of Italy. I am persuaded, he added, that, young as you are, I need not point out to you on what slight contingencies all human fortunes hang, and how completely the heir's recovery, or the birth of another prince, must change the aspect of your future. You have, I am sure, the heart to face such chances with becoming equanimity, and to carry the weight of conditional honors without any undue faith in their permanence. The admonition was so lightly uttered that it seemed rather a tribute to Odo's good sense than a warning to his inexperience. And indeed it was difficult for him, in spite of an instinctive aversion to the man, to quarrel with anything in his address or language. Tresker in fact possessed the art of putting younger men at their ease, while appearing as an equal among his elders. A gift doubtless developed by the circumstances of court life, and the need of at once commanding respect and disarming diffidence. He took leave upon his last words, declaring, in reply to the Countess's protests, that he had promised to accompany the court that afternoon to Stupinigi. Be but I hope, he added, turning to Odo, to continue our talk at greater length, if you will favor me with a visit tomorrow at my lodgings. No sooner was the door closed on her illustrious visitor than Donna Laura flung herself on Odo's bosom. I always knew it, she cried, my dearest. But, oh, that I should live to see the day. And she wept and clung to him with a thousand endearments, from the nature of which he gathered that she already beheld him on the throne of Pianura. To his laughing reminder of the distance that still separated him from that dizzy eminence, she made answer that there was far more than he knew, that the Duke had fallen into all manner of excesses which had already gravely impaired his health, and that for her part she only hoped her son, when raised to a station so far above her own, would not forget the tenderness with which he had ever cherished him, or the fact that Count Valdu's financial situation was one quite unworthy the stepfather of a reigning prince. Escaping at length from this parody of his own sensations, Odo found himself in a tumult of mind that solitude served only to increase. Events had so pressed upon him within the last few days that at times he was reduced to a passive sense of spectatorship, an inability to regard himself as the center of so many converging purposes. It was clear that Tresker's mission was mainly a pretext for seeing the Duke's young kinsman, and that some special motive must have impelled the Duke to show such sudden concern for his cousin's welfare. Tresker need hardly. Gutenberg edition. End of chapter.